Chicago? Not quite. Not quite Chicago, but pretty darn good, man. That's, of course, Rainbow, Richie Blackmore's Rainbow from 75.
Yes, they have rainbows in Chicago.
And the inimitable Ronnie James Dio.
Mr. Dio.
On a song called Self-Portrait, I believe, is this one. I think this kicks off side two.
It was his birthday, a couple weeks ago?
Oh, was it?
A week or so ago, yeah.
Man, I love this record. I love all this Rainbow
He's
stuff.
He's so great. Come on.
Yeah.
Who's a better singer than that?
Nobody.
For rock and roll.
For metal, no one.
Him and Ian Gillan. There you go. That's all you need.
And Richie played with both of them.
God.
Only sacked one of them, though. That'd be Dio.
Right? How do you sack Ronnie Dio? Fire Dio. Are you going to get a guy better than that? Who are you going to get?
Graham Bonnet?
Nice try.
No,
swing and a miss.
Swing and a miss, Ronnie. Right. Richie.
Right?
Sorry.
Richie Wigman.
You're sacked. I would sack myself for messing those names up. All right, let's get cracking.
Crack.
Release the Kraken.
Sorry. But no.
All right, everybody. Tonight, what do you say we have a rock and roll party?
Come on, boy.
Abbey Road Records show.
Heavy metal, rock and roll is always going to be with us. Day after day, year after year, it's never going to die.
Who likes rock and roll? Yeah!
Abbey Road Records show.
Put down the boxing gloves and try and just get it together.
Well, hey, Lava!
Hey, Lava!
Hey, Lava!
The Shabby Road Record Show is on the air, your hipster-free vinyl podcast. I'm your host, Ryan McKay, and now, he's your sonic security blanket and sippy cup. Let's all curl up on the welcoming tummy of A.D. Adam!
Well, that's right. It's time once again for my favorite night of the week. It's the night that I get to get high enough to forget that I'm even actually sitting in this god-awful studio. But it ain't so bad, because you all guys decided to stop in and join us. Welcome to another episode of the music podcast, the interweb would love to smack on the snout with a newspaper. It's the Shabby Road Record Show. Come on in, we got records.
We do got records to play for you guys tonight. Episode 222. Deuces are wild down here at Shabby Road. And we're gonna share these records for you and spin some yarns as we normally do. And we're also gonna say hi to Liz Damian Brooks over there in the Shabby Command Center. Liz.
Hello.
What's up?
Hey, LDB.
This guy.
How you feeling?
I'm feeling good.
She's looking good over there.
Right, I know. Yeah.
Feeling good.
Yes.
Yeah, she looks friendly, cheerful, happy to be here.
Well, tanned, rested, and ready.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, okay.
It's radio.
You pick one or four, none of those.
Right.
None of the above.
Right, yeah.
All together.
Enjoying the lovely Arizona weather here. It's balmy.
I believe it's
48 degrees.
Hot enough. I think the actual weather center, the Doppler thing, put out hot enough to boil a monkey's bum.
Yeah.
No Excellent.
Way. Yeah.
Wow. That's an official weather.
Weather Channel?
NOAA.
Yes.
NOAA's thing. Yeah. National Weather Service.
Boiling monkey's bum.
It's just below hotter than a witch's tit.
Yes, so keep them both inside. Yeah.
Now,
for God's
a witch's
sake.
Tit, though, could be cold or hot because it's colder than a witch's tit in a brass bra.
Right, then those are cold.
That's what I remember
those
from
are cold.
Living in a cold climate.
Right, yeah.
Speaking of
witch tit is a cold thing, yes.
Yes. Speaking of cold climates, she's brought with her Sal 5000 over there.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Ooh. She is a witch's tit in a brass bra.
Yes, boy. That's cold.
That's exactly what Sal 5000 is over there. Well, good to see you again there, Sal. Thanks for participating in our podcast. You know who participates in the podcast? Hey, master
that?
Of the sequiturs here. Alltheworldsastage.net, my friend.
Well,
what do you have to say?
Well, let me ask you something. Have you ever wondered, people out there, have you ever wondered what it is that makes performers like, let's say Katy Perry, Britney Spears, Nicki Minaj, and so many others like them so popular?
No.
No.
What's their tits? Of course, it's the fact that they pull those bad boys out in front of anybody. But anyway, unless you have a spectacular... Oh, Jesus.
My
unless,
goodness. Unless very animated over there.
Unless you have a spectacular rack doing your PR for you, uh-huh. You better have a better plan if you want your band to succeed. What plan would that be, you may ask? Well, the plan that I have is where you take a good long look at the promotional materials available to you and your band at alltheworldsastage.net. They've got every possible item you could even imagine that could be possibly adorned with your band's weight. They got every item you could possibly imagine that could be professionally adorned with your band's name, logo, or favorite photo. Everything from t-shirts to festival-sized stage backdrops to bass drum head logos, they've got you covered. So, if your sizable rack isn't selling your music, and Lord knows mine isn't, then let alltheworldsastage.net take care of it for you. The biggest selection, the best prices, alltheworldsastage.net.
Hey,
that's all the world's a stage.
.net.
Hey, how about we whack off?
Hey, I got a big rack.
10%. Yeah. Rack off. 10% if you mention Shabby Road Record Show when you put your order together. Great people over there at alltheworldsastage.net. Visit them today, everyone.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Well, the mystery boxes are locked and loaded here for episode 222.
Right.
And are we ready to do this? Are we picking cards already?
Room 222.
Liz is reaching into her brass bra.
Oh, Lord.
My sizable rack.
Her sizable
rack. Her bountiful
bosom. Her horns of plenty.
I think bosom's better when it's with it's plural. Bosoms.
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 They are plural.
Yeah.
There's more than one.
Boobs are funny.
Boobs are funny.
Oh, while she's reaching into that brass bra, we've got a good friend here who did it last week. He's done it again. He did it twice in one day, and he's ready to do it again. I'm quoting a Mel Brooks movie now. Eric Barrett. He's got his beer here tonight. He's went to the website and bought beer for us again. He did it last week. He did it twice, back to back.
A habitual enabler. We love you for that.
Yeah,
I just opened one up.
All right. Well, are we drinking here tonight?
We're drinking, we're drinking Guinness
again.
Yeah, it's the beer choice down here at the Shab. We're stepping up, moving on up.
Yeah, finally good beer.
Yeah.
The Millers are gone, although I found a Miller and I put it in the fridge.
Did you?
It's good.
Yeah, there's a couple over there.
Chilling.
I tried to hide them.
I sniffed them out.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah. You'd think my Irishness would sniff out the Guinness, but no.
No.
Yeah.
No. So thank you, Eric. ShabbyRoadRecordShow.com. You'll find a little frosty mug of beer there that says fill the fridge. It's a PayPal link. You can donate to that fridge there, which is really more of a cooler these days because you actually have real legitimate food and beverage in your fridge.
Well, beer and
there's rarely enough room in your fridge to house the mass quantities of beer that it takes us to bring you this podcast every week.
It is. We drink a lot of beer down here.
Well, usually after the show or during.
Well,
all right. Well, I guess I'm going to pick.
Who's going first here?
Let's see. I'm going to go, I usually do left, but I'm going to go right.
So right side, let's see, red side of the room going first or black?
Red side going first.
I guess I'm going first then, aren't I?
All right.
Ryan, dude, okay. The first, this little dip into my mystery box tonight, this first one right here is such a good one, man. It's just such a, I'm just patting it like me and a, like your puppy, you would pat your puppy on a, like when you're both kind of chilling on the couch.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just petting this mystery box. I love this mystery box. I love what's in here. What I've got, the first little dip into my box, is one of the greatest little pop songs you've never heard that you'll ever hear.
Hmm. all right.
Right? This band made its first foray and only foray onto our little Kenny Blankenship of a show.
I don't even get that reference.
Oh, really?
No.
Do you remember? You remember the MXC Challenge, Kenny Blankenship and Vic Romano? That Japanese game show was like an obstacle course.
Oh,
where it was translated and it was
yes.
Like Kenny Blankenship and Vic Romano or whatever. Yeah.
Whatever happened to that show? Can we watch it on YouTube?
MXC, wasn't it? MXC,
we loved
was
it.
Yeah, Kenny Blankenship.
Oh
right?
My God, that's like from 2000 and. Two?
That was such a great show.
It aired in America.
Yeah, I'd have a few kid real high and watch that one. Anyway, but this band in the box I am the band in a box. Sorry.
You got Alice in Chains?
No. But they first appeared on episode 133, Return of the Record, the Dollar Record Bonanza.
Oh,
so this band made its debut and only spin on that episode way, way long time ago. And I was blown away by it. You had let me borrow the record.
So it's my pick.
It was your pick way back then, and I'm like, wow! And you found it for a buck.
Yeah.
And you're going to get to tell part of the story here in a second, but you let me borrow it, and I listened to it. I'm like, that's good. But I found it, and it's kind of a rare record. You don't see it a lot. It's got a great story behind it, and I found it for like $2.99 at the Record Room right down the road. And I'm like, what is it with this? And I brought it home. This is a great record, man. It's a great record. It's like one of those City Boy surprises where you go,
City Boy the band.
Yeah, like this record is better than I thought it was. And the more I listen, I'm going, fuck, this is an amazing record. And so what you had played was the first track on the record. It was just this perfect pop song, like power pop song, and it was just and I didn't realize how good that was until I got this record again, and I'm going, holy fuck.
Oh, so I think I know what you got.
I got the Laughing Dogs. I found this record
and I had not heard it. That's why I played. Did I play side one, track one?
You play Get 'em Out of Town, right?
Yeah, I just pulled that record out like a couple weeks ago.
Did you listen to the whole thing?
I did one side. Sometimes I'll just listen to one side and just move on. I'll grab like five records.
Brilliant.
It's
brilliant.
Good
record. I love this record. I got it again. $2.99.
Yeah.
And down the road, and it's not one you find every day. It's a pop masterpiece. Now, why did you? And I kind of wrote in this story. Talked to Ryan about. I mean, you told the story on the first on episode 133.
Oh, there's a very clear reason
just
why.
To recap. Yeah.
Well, first of all, it's a dollar, and the cover is the same cover as Wicked Lester.
Yes.
It's a boy sitting on the stoops of a New York tenement with a dog. And you've seen Wicked, if any Kiss fans know that, you know, Wicked Lester, of course, is Paul and Gene's original band
pre-Kiss
band. And they were signed to, was it RCA or?
I believe it was RCA.
Something epic.
They were signed to Forget About It Records.
Forget It, like it ain't coming out. Yeah. So the record was shelved. It never came out. Wicked Lester was the name of the band.
So these guys go,
but the
hey.
Album art was done, and it's that photograph, which is some sort of stock photograph, I guess. But the Laughing Dogs are also a New York band.
A Brooklyn band.
Yeah. So they use that same photograph. And so combing through the dollar bin at the local record store, I see that cover and I go, what the fuck? And yeah, I think, yeah. Wicked
you
Lester.
Think you found Wicked Lester, yeah.
And I go, the Laughing Dogs. I'm like, well, I'm buying this. I don't care. It's a great story for the podcast.
And it's only a buck.
And it's a
what
dollar.
What's the worst that could happen? You spent a buck.
Yeah. And so we put it on and that song rocked. And I took it home and I'm like,
right?
Dude, this record's great.
It is good.
Why is it so good?
It's a great record. And there's so many pop songs. Now, these guys came up around, like I said, they're from Brooklyn. Mid-70s to late 70s when the punk scene was happening. Patti Smith was rocking, Patti Smith group. Blondie was happening, that whole CBGB scene. Mm-hmm. You know, Max's Kansas City was kind of getting worn out and that was kind of going nowhere. But CB's was gaining popularity and the whole thing with the Ramones. There was such a thing going on then, you know?
Great time to be in New York City playing rock and roll, like you know, punkier rock and
roll. So these guys were, you know, regulars in the on the CBGB thing, and they toured with Patti Smith group. They toured with a couple other bands, you know, from that scene. So, you know, you kind of told the story in episode 133, which is great. So you know, I kind of looked through here.
I don't remember the story. If there's anything you have, I feel like I don't remember all the details.
I mean, just the setup and
about the
album cover and all that stuff. So what happened was that the band consists of this guy, Carter Cathcart. Right?
Do you guys...
James.
I'm at the local grocery store. Do you guys have a Carter Cathcart?
We don't, sorry, sir. We don't take Carter Cart.
No, I need to buy the swimming pool for my kids. Do you have a credit card?
Is that cash or credit card?
A catheter?
I need a credit card.
Is that cash or credit card?
I feel like it's like the thing at Home Depot where you the big fucking huge thing if you're buying sheets of wood.
I talked to a sign at a drive-thru sounded like that today. I kept going, what? And they're spitting in my drink every time I say what. I think that's probably a game they play. Like every time the fucking dude in the car says what, spit in his drink. Like, what? And their speakers are so bad. Anyway.
If we get to five times, you put your wiener in it.
Yeah, you do the old dip. Dippity-doo. Carter Cathcart.
Is that a East Coast name for that?
I made that. The old swizzle stick.
Never during drive-thru.
Yeah, again. I'm not either. So he's a guitar player, keyboard player, and they all sing. And then you got this James Leonard guy. Now he and this Ronnie, and he's a guitar player. Then you got Ronnie Carl. He's a bass player. And again, they all sing. Leonard and Carl are the main songwriting
sidekicks of Homer Simpson.
Yes, Leonard and Carl.
Is it Lenny and Carl or no, the sidekicks for Homer Simpson at the power plant? Yeah.
No, it's James Leonard and Ronnie Carl. Okay. That's a trip. So they're the main songwriting team. Now, Carter Cathcart, he contributes one full song and he does, I think he co-writes one or two on there. And then, of course, they got the drummer, who's a guy with one of the coolest names in the history of rock.
Ooh.
Mo Potts. So, matter of fact, while you guys are out writing the song, I'm going to be sitting here smoking Mo Potts. I'm going to smoke Mo Potts right now. God damn.
Oh, my God.
So, anyway, hang on.
Oh, is that for Mo Potts? A little,
yeah.
long distance dedication.
Like I said, Ryan.
Mo Potts is sitting on his couch, immobile.
Played them on a previous.
Cannot even press play on his iPhone. To listen to this podcast.
Okay, so Brooklyn, blah, blah, blah. So now that we're all caught up with them, okay, so I those are the guys in the band. I went down the band's lineup and just, okay, what are they doing now? What happened? So they did two studio albums and then a live album, which I'd love to get a hold of that.
A live album? at Max's Kansas City, I'll bet you, or Bottom Line.
Probably CB's or somewhere around there. But so they did another studio album after this. But they just... They just kind of went away. Too live and gone, right? So the band breaks up. Most of the guys, you know, pretty much find a musical future in the land of notoriety, you know, and just kind of doing probably day gigs and off to nowhere land. Except for this guy.
Like us.
Except for this guy, Carter Cathcart.
Carter. Do you guys have a Carter Cathcart?
Carter Cathcart. I need help carrying these. Do you have a Carter Cathcart?
We don't have a credit card machine.
A Carter Cathcart.
We have a chip reader in the car.
Chip on me, Carter. So anyway, first thing I do is I go to Wikipedia. He's the only guy in the band with the little blue clicky thing when you...
Oh,
right?
Okay.
So I clicked on it, okay? First thing I see is like a thousand...
Good for you for understanding what that means.
I know. I was pretty proud.
The link.
I patted myself on the head and gave myself a biscuit and a rub.
I'm sure you did.
Yeah.
Susie Quattro.
I'm doing that right now. I'm giving myself a
in the masturbatorium. Right?
So I see about 1,000 aliases under this guy's name. So his given name is James Carter Cathcart. Okay. But he also uses the name, obviously, Carter Cathcart. He also goes by the name Jimmy Zoppi.
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 Okay.
He also goes by Billy Beach. He also goes by Nicole Cathcart.
Okay. I see what's happening here. Okay.
He also goes by John Dorsey.
Oh, he went back.
He also goes by the name of Burton Halley.
Okay.
He also goes by the name of Rascal. I'm not making these up. Rascal Flatts.
Is he on the run?
And he also goes by the name of
CC DeVille.
And I'm not kidding. Slappy Wong.
Come on.
Slappy Wong. Now,
that's for the
I'm
Asian
going, what the
version.
Fuck is with this guy?
He's, what the?
No. Okay, let's get, now, just so we're tagging
we're
up.
We're all going, what the fuck is with this
just
guy?
Just so we're tagging up. This is a great, great pop band with some great records. And it's not all just pop. There's some great punk
rock and roll,
in here,
yeah.
Rock and roll. Okay, let's get back to the story.
Slappy Wong.
So this is what
the
we're talking
saga
about.
Of Slappy Wong, please. Slappy Wong. Please do tell.
And turns out that this guy co-writes Remember Me with Ace Frehley on his Trouble Walking album.
Okay, that's like a right? blues. I don't know. A co-write's a strong word, and it's a 1/4.
Carter Cathcart. Or whatever name, or it might Slappy Wong. Yeah,
Slappy Wong is my favorite. Rascal Flatts is a band.
Yeah, he probably took band. That. Who knows? So anyway, so what's he doing? Well, this is 89, and he's about done. So he, the guy with many names, starts doing television commercials. Now, he's a musician, right? So you're thinking, oh, he's writing jingles. No, he's doing voiceover work. So he did commercials for, like, Kit Kat bars. Hey, right. Are you hungry? In between snacks is a Kit Kat bar. Wouldn't you like a Kit Kat?
Listen to your Slappy Wong.
Right. Yeah. I'm Slappy Wong for Kit Kat bars. Wouldn't you like some chocolate?
Break me off a piece right? of that.
So he did that. He did.
And break
he
me
did
off a piece of that Slappy Wong.
Coors Light from the Colorado Rockies. Coors Light.
Really?
Yes. And then he also did Good Humor ice cream commercials. Yay. A.D. Adams, don't eat this. You will shit for days. You know you're lactose intolerant. So he makes this. He makes it huge as a voiceover guy. Now, Ryan, your daughter is an incredible artist. Incredible artist.
Oh,
and I don't want to drag her through this horrible
please
show.
Don't bring her
no,
into
I'm not going
to
bring her too far into this. But she's an incredible artist. I mean, we've all seen her talents, right?
Yes. Yeah,
and,
she's really good.
And her interest, as I've seen, and style lie heavily in the anime genre.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So this guy, Slappy Wong, Carter Cathcart, Nicole Cathcart, whatever guy is, but under the name Jimmy Zoppy, is not only a star, but a mega star. I'm talking about as big a star as you can get in the world of voiceover in anime cartoons, Ryan.
Would you happen to have any of the cartoons listed at all?
I do. I saved them up here. So,
know any of these.
This guy, I mean, I know none of them. I'm so out of touch with that. I knew
one. There are
like Pokemon.
Thousands.
Right, yeah.
Thousands.
So, dude, he's the fucking Mel Blanc of anime. So, have you ever heard of Alien 9?
No.
No.
Art of Fighting?
No.
Cubix?
Nope.
Girl Revolution Utena?
Just keep going and I'll...
Gaku-san.
It's...
Ike Unchi Taku Bu. Mirmo. Monica's Gang. One Piece. Ping Pong Club. Pokemon. He's James.
Yes.
He's James in
Pokemon. Of course. The kids watched Pokemon when they were younger.
Revolutionary Girl Utena. Shaman King. Seven of Seven. No? Still no? All right. Hang on.
There's thousands of anime.
Sonic X. Tama and Friends. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. He's Raz. I heard of that. Twin Angels. The World of Naru. Tokyo Mew Mew. I like that. Ultimate Muscle, the Kinnikuman Legacy.
This is
Ultraman
great.
Tiger. Yugo-E.
Yugo-E, yeah.
Okay, he's Loomis.
Okay, well, so James from Pokemon. I think that's the most popular.
James from Pokemon, yeah. So, he's like this, I mean, dude, this
list. In the
list,
American dub.
This list, I could do this for the next
or
20
English
minutes.
Dub. American dub.
I've
it's
never
not English
dude,
dub.
Dude, but
it's
weird.
American.
It's weird to me because he's such a huge superstar. That's like me saying to some kid, I go, you know, Barney Fife. And they go, who? And I'm like,
get out of here,
dude,
Grandpa.
Fucking Barney fucking Fife. Are you fucking kidding? Barney fucking Fife. And they go, James from Pokemon. I go, who?
Yeah.
Or Ochi
I don't know which character James is, but yeah, Pokemon.
Right, yeah. So, dude, this guy's list of credits is just like, so he's a bazillion. He is so huge. He's like the fucking...
Mel Blanc of anime.
The De Niro Mel Blanc. I mean, the fucking... Anyway.
I like this. I'll have to tell Zoe that when I get home. I'll be like, this guy on this record is like the Mel Blanc of anime. She'll be like, what
Mel
does
Blanc?
That sentence
yeah.
mean?
Jimmy Zoppy. Zoppi. Yeah.
Okay. We'll have to look for that name.
So, yeah, man.
First, I'll have to learn how to read it in Japanese.
And the rest of the guys just kind of faded away, you know. That was about that for these guys. I mean, great band, though. Great songs on this album. Back to the album. Great players, great production. Bruce Botnick produced the album. Engineered for the Stones, the Doors. He produced Kenny Loggins, Eddie Mahoney.
Well, it's a punchy-sounding record, so those...
I think it's a great-sounding record.
Yeah, I'm not fans of those artists per se, but they are punchy little records.
So Ryan, what I'm going to do is I'm going to play a song that is just, it's so sweet. It's such a beautiful, sappy little pop song. It reminds me of NRBQ for some reason.
Oh.
But it's just this beautiful, happy little pop jangle. It's just ridiculously catchy hook. But sitting on top of all that, like the cherry on top, it's just these sweet, simple, syrupy lyrics that just so many great pop songs are made of. And not like bubblegum stuff, but just like kind of just these silly little, I don't know, just
simple.
Delightfully guilty pleasure of a song.
Okay.
It's called Reason for Love. You remember that one?
I think I know which one you're talking about.
I'll put it on and you go,
can't sing
oh
it
my
for
God.
You.
And it's
yeah.
So, if you're not singing this hook all week long, then I don't know, man. It's just, I heard this song, sat down and I couldn't stop the record. I'm driving, you know, to a gig 2 days later. And I'm singing this fucking song like an earworm. So Laughing
Did you
Dogs,
take a wrong turn? That's why you were driving 2 days later?
Yeah, yes, yes.
I am really lost. I'm in Texas.
We're actually doing this show from my hotel room.
In Lubbock.
Thanks for coming to get me and bringing that gas can, you guys. Appreciate
yeah,
you.
Were, yeah.
So this is Reason for Love, Laughing Dogs from 1979, CBS Records. Reason for Love, the Laughing Dogs, right?
God, is that a smart pop song.
It is, man. I'm telling you, that record, Ryan, when you lent it to me, we were kind of chatting while it was playing, or just, you know, and we kind of touched on the fact that you listen to that record and you put it on and you do your thing, sort of what I call listening passively, you know, sort of kind of going about your business with the record playing, until you really sit and listen to every song. And stylistically, it's not all pop songs. The first one you played by them, you know, on episode 133 is a pop, great pop song.
Yeah.
And this one is a great pop song. It's
yeah.
a well-crafted pop song. And, but they're deeper than that. They do other stuff. And it's just become one of my new favorite albums. It's new to me after having discovered it through the show with you playing that and having found it, I listened to it proper. I sat down and I listened to each song and I went, every song on this record is really,
yeah.
really good.
Yeah.
It's one of those surprise records that you go, who?
There's nothing better than that, to like to sit
right?
down
yeah.
and I love a good pair of headphones at night, you know, coming home from a gig or just it's my one night. I don't have to get up in the morning, so I'll pull a few records and then just really good headphones and really critically listen to some of these records.
Right.
And you hear the placement of all the instruments and all that stuff. It's so cool. And I think this record I need to do that with, because I've always listened passively, except for back then when I got it and I was like texting you going, holy shit, this record is amazing. You
yeah.
won't believe it.
And here it is 2019, and to me it's brand new. Well, this record came out in 79.
Yeah.
I mean, shit, if I didn't...
40 years old.
I didn't even know. I'd never heard of it. If I'd have had this record and owned that record, I'd probably done less drugs or something. Who knows? Let's not go nuts. I might have done more.
Very cool. All right.
Laughing Dogs, man. Find that record. Pick it up. $2.99. Ryan, you found it for $1.
$1.
It's out there, man. Wow.
Somebody mislabeled that one.
Right?
Okay. Seaborg Record Collection time for me. Of course, our good pal Steven Seaborg has sent this out. Last week we had your Maggots, the record.
I had a monster last week, yes.
I believe in his email to us, he mentioned this as being one of the greatest live albums of all time. And when I got it into my hands, I looked at him and went, this is one of the greatest live albums of all
Klaus
time?
Klaus Nomi live?
But then I put it on and I went, holy shit.
Yeah.
Milo Miles raved in Rolling Stone. He said that this is not an album. It's a crime scene. This album is included in Mojo's The 67 Lost Albums You Must Own, in part calling it an unbelievably seismic document of rock and roll so demonic and primal it can barely keep its stage suit on.
I don't know if you people out there listening can hear my smile. And if you can hear me grinning. Oh, my.
Of course, we'll visit allmusic.com
yes.
for our reviews and stuff. They say it's the purest, hardest rock and roll ever committed to record.
Jesus.
Compared to this, thrash metal sounds tame. The Stooges sound constrained. Hardcore punk seems neutered.
MC5.
And the Sex Pistols sound like wimps. Rock and roll is about the fire in the performance, and nothing sounds as fiery as this. Nothing hits as hard or sounds as loud either. It's no stretch to call this the greatest live album ever. Nor is it a stretch to call it the greatest rock and roll album ever.
What?
Recorded over two sets on April 5th, 1964.
MC5.
You're not going to believe who I'm pulling out of here, but what these words they speak are true. This record is...
Oh, it's got to be James Brown.
I brought Jerry Lee Lewis.
What?
Oh, what?
Live at the Star Club in Hamburg in 1964.
Oh, in Germany?
I am just as shocked as you guys, but wait till you hear what's going on this record.
Wow. Jesus, 64.
Yeah.
He was wasn't he kind of a wreck by then?
He was a
yes.
raging alcoholic.
He was a mess,
yes.
right?
Yes. Yes.
He
yes.
was, I mean, the Yay. Beatles had come along. He's about out of work.
So,
for the most part, right? I mean,
he can't do
hey,
anything.
People were done with that guy. You know,
so
right?
for decades, this album was available only in Europe due to some legal constraints.
He married his
there
cousin.
There was a biography like just a few years ago, and they asked Jerry Lee Lewis about it. Oh, man, that was a big monster record, but the record company never paid me a penny. From
Jesus.
It. He's backed by, on this concert, he's backed by a British band called the Nashville Teens. Johnny Allen on guitar, Pete Shannon Harris on bass, and Barry Jenkins on drums. Barry Jenkins went on to join a group called the Animals.
Oh, wow.
That makes sense.
And,
what?
And look at the greatest gatefold since Kiss Alive 2 as 80 is just unsheathed. Look at that. That is Hamburg's Red Light District.
Oh, God.
It's like an octagon.
It's like origami.
Yeah.
It's almost like origami. Yeah.
It's a gatefold album when you open it up, like one of those birthday cards that pop up books. And unfold.
Yeah, as Steven Seaborg said, they went above and beyond with this.
Oh my God.
That's cool as shit,
Look
ain't it?
Look at that. It's one of the coolest album covers I've ever seen.
Yeah, the gatefold is no one. I mean, I think I got to give it to that over Kiss Alive 2, even though.
This is more clever.
It's really just a map.
Clever.
An illustrated map of downtown Hamburg, or at least the red light district of Hamburg, where the Beatles were playing in 1964. Yeah, Hamburg.
Hamburg.
So they're right. When you put this record on, the only thing that I think rivals it is Sam Cooke, the Sam Cooke record I played.
Oh, yeah.
Live at the Harlem Square Club. The James Brown Live at the Apollo.
That's...
things that
Dynamite,
are
like that.
BB King Live at the Regal, maybe, but this has just got to beat. It is claustrophobic. It is Jerry Lee just being a badass. I mean, he is beating the fuck out of that piano,
and he's drinking heavy. He's doing a fuck ton of speed,
and the band
right,
is great.
Amphetamines. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If I told you twice, I told you three times.
Oh, where do you begin with the life of Jerry Lee Lewis? I've got a couple stories. Before we go, we're going to hear High School Confidential on here, track two. But
it's where he picked up his wife.
Most notoriously, okay, he's been married 7 times. Okay.
Killed a couple.
We'll get there. Yeah, notoriously, he married his 13-year-old first cousin once removed, Myra Brown, in December of 57.
I got nothing.
But when that happened, and this is covered in the movie Great Balls of Fire and any other behind the music stuff you've ever seen with Jerry Lee Lewis.
Great Battered Wives song, by the way.
Great Balls of Fire?
Yeah.
Is it a Battered Wives? Oh, the band, yeah, Canadian punk rock band, yeah. I was like, is it about beating? No. This kind of ended his run the way in, like, what is it? It's 57,
yeah.
You know, 58.
But like I said, the Beatles hit, and that was that. You know,
I think before the Beatles even hit, the 13-year-old cousin Mary.
Well, that didn't help. That didn't help a lot.
That was it.
Yeah.
I mean,
huge moral thing there.
Even in England, I remember it being covered, at least in the film, that it was like, whoa, and get the hell out of our country.
You can't do
weirdo.
That here. Yeah, don't do that here.
It's my wife.
Yeah.
It's your cousin, and she's 13.
She's in the fourth grade.
Yeah. Literally. My daughter is older than that.
Right.
It's like,
that's horrifying.
It is jaw droppingly disgusting. But they did stay married.
I wrote a whole lot of shaking.
They stayed married for like 13 years. I mean, as long as she was grounded the whole time.
Until she hit
you're grounded.
Yeah. I want a divorce. You're not going anywhere till you eat your vegetables.
Once she became an adult.
You're grounded.
Well, now, his fourth marriage, Myra, the 13-year-old, was his third marriage. The first one lasted...
So they didn't really stay married then. He just...
Yeah, he doesn't get married for... Every time you see like the list of marriages, the next one happens like 2 months later, if not overlapping like the first two did.
Right, yeah.
The second marriage only lasted like 77 days or something.
Can't do that. Yes, I can.
I've fallen in love with my 13-year-old cousin. So,
once removed.
Fourth marriage, beginning in 1971, would last until 1982. Good run. 11 years.
Yeah. What, her age or how long they were married?
No. Until 1982 when she drowned in a pool at a friend's house.
Took the floaties off, did he?
Well, she. I think she was of age. His fifth marriage.
Oh, Jesus.
Lasted 77 days from June to August of 83, ending with her death. Apparently, Jerry Lee Lewis abused her and may have been responsible for her death, but the allegations were never verified or proven.
Okay, let's go back to the drowning. Where did that happen? Their backyard pool?
At a friend's.
Nice. Liz, you seem to know. Do you have anything else to add with that? I don't know if you know any, if you've read any books or...
haven't read any books. I just remember all of this happening.
Yeah. Damn. Oh, do you remember it happening back in the...
Well, yeah.
I don't remember all that. I remember the cousin thing.
I grew up in That's it, pretty... so, yeah.
But wow. I've... Okay, now I've got my favorite story. So enough about the marriages.
I have a story.
Okay, go for it.
Remember, you probably remember when he played at Louis Rec City.
Jerry Lee Lewis played it at a club where you guys grew up.
He probably did.
And he beat the shit out of that grand piano that they had.
You're about to hear him beat the shit out of a grand piano at Star Club.
Really?
Yeah, he broke it.
I'm surprised that this motherfucking piano didn't break.
And refused to. He refused to reimburse them to get a new one. I mean,
that's why they call
busted
him the,
that piano.
They call him the killer.
Wow, I don't remember that. I wasn't there. Wish I had been.
That'd have been badass.
I know his pal Chuck Berry was an asshole. His pal, like they, hey Chuck, hi Jerry.
They were good friends.
Yeah.
So, November 22nd.
Oh God.
1976, Jerry Lee was arrested outside of Elvis Presley's Graceland home for allegedly intending to shoot him. Lewis had already nearly killed his own bass player, Butch Owens, on September 29th of that same year. It was Jerry Lee's birthday that night, when a .357 Magnum accidentally went off in his hand. Jerry Lee said that the reclusive Elvis Presley had been trying to reach him and finally did on November 23rd, the night in question, imploring him to come on out to the house. Uh-huh. And Jerry Lee replied that he would. You know, Elvis, I love to come over.
Elvis.
Elvis, I love to come over and see you, but I got to get my daddy, Elmo, out of jail.
I'm your daddy.
He's been picked up for a DUI. So Jerry Lee's got to get his father, whose name is Elmo, out of jail for drinking and driving. So
tickle me.
Later, in Tunica. So later that night, that very same night, so I guess Jerry Lee Lewis went and got Elmo out of jail.
And then went back over to Elvis's house?
No.
We were partying, Elvis.
Nope, we are stopping at the bar for some drinks. So Lewis was at a Memphis nightclub called Vapors, drinking champagne, when he was given a gun by someone.
Because
that's what you do.
Hi, Jerry Lee Lewis. Here, have a gun.
Here's a gun.
Would you like what would you like to drink? Would you like a gun with that?
That sounds all right.
Buy a shot, get a free gun.
And I don't take no lip from no bartender neither.
You know that burger comes with fries or a gun. Or you can have a salad. You can choose a salad.
Gun.
You want a gun with that?
So he's sitting here, he's got his gun. He's on God knows how many bottles of champagne.
And
he suddenly remembers, oh shit.
Elvis.
I forgot all about to Elvis. And so he went to see him. I got to go.
Can you put this gun in the go box?
Are you not going to finish your gun?
No. I'm done with the salad, but I'm going to take the gun with me. And can you put a cheesecake in there too, please? Elvis is going to be hungry.
So he wanders out into his Lincoln Continental with the loaded pistol on the dashboard.
And he's driving.
Oh, yeah.
Well, of course.
Meanwhile, let's not forget that he just got Elmo, his dad, out of jail for a DUI.
Sure.
Okay?
Yeah.
Just saying. A bottle of champagne under his arm.
Where else do you put it when you're driving, Ryan?
I don't know.
Between your legs.
And off he goes to Graceland to see Elvis.
Elvis.
So, just before 3 o'clock in the morning... Jerry Lee Lewis accidentally smashed into the gates of Graceland. Oh, shit.
Well,
it's not a rural. You've been there, Ryan, haven't you?
Yeah, I have. Well, when I was like
road.
11.
No, it's not a rural road.
It's a it's like going down University Boulevard here. We're like down Baseline. There's like two lanes, three lanes each way.
You sumbitch A.D. Adams, let me tell you something. So I had a bottle of champagne under my arm. Every road is rural at that point. I got a gun on the dashboard, and don't you tell me any different.
It's like a freaking sharp right into the damn driveway.
Yeah, you'd have
I took that sharp right, and I got right through that gate, didn't
I?
Elvis is on the gates, too, so you just ran right into Elvis.
So imagine the scene, quiet, 3 o'clock in the morning. You hear the crickets. Elvis's cousin was manning the gate, just kind of sitting there. All of a sudden, here comes a Lincoln Continental with a drunken Jerry Lee Lewis. And just drives right through the fucking gate. And then, so the cousin goes up to the car door and he remembers seeing Jerry Lee Lewis try to get out of his car, but apparently the door was kind of jammed, so he tried to hurl the champagne bottle out the window, but it was already rolled up, and bounced back at the
and knocked himself out.
And I don't know what he's.
Oh, come on, we've all done that.
Yeah.
So, the cousin calls with the little gate code thing, calls out Elvis in his room, and. Elvis, you ain't gonna believe this.
King, we have a problem.
You ain't gonna believe us. I got Jerry Lee Lewis. He just went through the gate here at Graceland, and he's got a bottle of champagne. He's got a gun, and he's drunker than 10 motherfuckers.
Drunker than Cooter Brown.
And
you got any pills?
Now, meanwhile, do you think Elvis is asleep? No, he's wide awake.
He's shooting the TV and having a peanut butter banana sandwich.
He watched the whole thing on closed circuit television.
He never slept.
Hang on, now, I'll be right out. I'm watching TV.
He goes, well, you ought to call the police. And that's exactly what they did. So the police came and they found the gun. They found a very drunk Jerry Lee Lewis.
He called the police because, remember, they were probably in competition once upon a time. He goes, that old drunk to jail.
That's the
look
thing.
What I got going right now.
Priscilla.
You know what?
Priscilla, I think I ought to put old Jerry Lee away.
Yep. He didn't have to say call
sure
the cops.
He
could have said, bring him on in. Let's take care of him.
Give me my pills.
But how vindictive is that?
Peanut butter jelly sandwich.
They all started at Sun Records.
We
Johnny Cash, Jerry Lee Lewis.
Yeah, but you know what? Elvis
and
was
Elvis.
At the height of his fame. He made
that's
that
right
big there. Comeback. He did the big comeback spread. Then he did that Hawaii thing. Even when he was bloated and sweaty.
Stop eating, Elvis.
I wasn't that happy.
He's trying to eat.
You're interrupting my sandwich. Liz, I was awful. Never washed up. Excuse me.
Never washed up.
AD, you have any mustard?
There's a lot in your shirt, Elvis.
Yeah, just
a little do.
Just use your fingers.
You don't go good with this.
But right, I mean,
pretzel. Pretzel bread.
What a shitty thing to do, though, right?
Yeah.
He could have not called
well,
the cops.
Well, the cops say that Jerry Lee Lewis got out of the car finally. With his bottle of champagne under his arm.
And again,
protesting, hollering, threatening everyone.
It's not like there weren't probably dozens of other cars driving by while this is happening.
Oh yeah, he's led away in handcuffs. And then they asked Elvis, the cops asked Elvis, so, Mr. Presley, what would you like to do with old Jerry Lee here?
Eat him. Serve him with a barbecue sauce.
Put that sandwich down.
You know what I think y'all do, boys? Hand me that gravy
over
there first.
Strung out on heroin.
Lock him up.
Oh, so did he really?
Yeah,
really?
Had him locked up. Yeah.
See, that's so not cool, man.
What year was this? Did I say 73?
Yeah, it was still cool to drive drunk back then.
76.
Oh, not so
Elvis
cool.
would be dead 9 months later.
Yeah.
So this is heavy, Elvis.
Yeah, Priscilla, yeah, that's karma right there.
Priscilla was gone.
Yeah. Who's still alive?
Oh, yeah.
Right?
He was dating that one chick at the time, Elvis was, with
Ginger.
That saved him from drowning in a bowl of cereal.
That's right.
Oh, my God, Elvis.
He's now face down in his Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
Oh, my God. Okay, so here we go. Let's do this, man. Let's go to Hamburg and listen to...
Okay.
This band is crushing it, and Jerry Lee is throwing it down.
Like a hot summer night in Hamburg, right?
You know, everyone... I think it's almost universal that we've forgotten that Jerry Lee Lewis is a thing.
Yeah.
You know, and if this hopefully will kind of remind some people out there. Dude, when it comes to a solo, it's that classic 50s rock thing where the band is like playing straight time, and Jerry Lee plays nothing but triplets against
it.
Yeah. And just as slow, not slow, but I mean, the tempo's burning.
He's just pulling back of the beat.
And it's just, and he, you said he broke a piano at that club.
Yep. Yeah, Louis Rock
listen
City.
To the, listen to him beat the, it sounds like a tack hammer.
Yeah.
I mean, he is crushing that thing, and the crowd is dying. They cannot believe they're seeing a rock and roll legend. It is unbelievable.
Now
this thing is a crime scene. As much as Graceland's gates falling down and Elvis out there going, lock him up. That's what should have happened at the end of this show.
Damn. I'm excited, dude. Wow, Jerry Lee Lewis.
Side one, track two, let's AD go. High School Confidential. Name of the record is Live at the Star Club, Hamburg, 1964 on Bear Family Records out of Germany.
Huh.
Thank you, Steven Seaborg. I love this record. This is a prized possession in my catalog.
Thank you. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to say it's a pleasure, a great honor to be back at the fabulous, most beautiful, I mean really swinging, Star Club. All right. Yeah. You better open up, honey, get your lover boy, me, that's knocking. You better listen to me, sugar roller, catch the red, the high school, the rocket. Honey, get your bobbing shoes, for the jukebox to blow the fuse. Got everybody hopping, everybody bopping, bopping up a high school house. Little ditty. This is one we had out a while back, done pretty good for us. Why don't you break down, honey, and give me just a little bit of that money?
Oh,
I want to be there.
Are they rocking?
Oh, or,
my goodness.
He is punishing. Punishing that piano, but that drummer is killing that snare drum. That backbeat is so fat.
It's great.
The kick drum is exploding. I mean, can you imagine what it sounds like in that room at the time?
Yeah, that's the
Holy
thing.
Shit,
obviously,
wow.
All the accolades go to Jerry Lee Lewis, but I mean, that band is just punishing.
And he's
their
doing those half note
just
triplets,
as much.
Because he's keeping that half note triplet over that quarter note.
Yeah.
Is it like the perfect 3/4 polyrhythm for that?
Yeah.
What, like 12 bars or however many it was?
Yeah.
And I think my favorite part of the song, obviously all of it, but that triplet, that polyrhythm thing was one thing. But there's one part near the end after that, and the solo's continuing. And all of a sudden you can hear the crowd, they're like, ah, right?
Yeah.
And you're going, he's got to be like, what's he doing visually? What's he doing?
He's because, kicked his chair. Don't you think he's kicked his chair out?
And at one point, he's just there's no piano. So he's either fallen or he's doing a handstand or something. And
yeah, because he loses like his left hand is kind of gone. His right hand's really far away from where his left hand once was.
And not really nailing it.
And it, you know? Yeah, it's almost like, are you standing on your head?
He's doing a keg stand on the fucking, yeah.
Remember, didn't he used to, like, you know, he spread his legs out really, really, you know.
Oh,
like,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So he was doing some sort of one of those Jerry Lee Lewis moves. But you can hear the crowd totally reacting to it. It's kind of cool.
Yeah.
And then he comes back in sort of like, whoa, fucking.
And that's as is. There's no overdubs there. I mean, the guy that recorded that, I think he was a local promoter or something, but he just put... I tried to get the microphones as close to the instruments as possible, and then I put some stereo mics on the crowd. And this is going down to a 2-track or a 4-track in 1964. So there's no going back and fixing anything. It is as it happened.
Right.
So, I mean, that is part of the charm of the
record.
Pure
energy.
Obviously. I mean, yeah, exactly.
It really is.
The energy is unbelievable. And it's kind of cool in the sense like it reminds you of what rock and roll is supposed to be. I mean, we play our punk rock, but
that's punk rock. It's the attitude.
It's proto
punk. Attitude, man.
Yeah, and that attitude is there in space.
Oh, for fuck's sake!
As it was at Graceland.
Yeah,
that night
he sounded like he was slurring a little bit. You know, when he's
I think he's had a few.
Yeah.
Remember they did 2 shows, so I don't know which one. I feel like that one was so hot that maybe it was from the second show, which means he was drunk.
Yeah, the audience was already well into it.
Yeah.
As well. No doubt about it.
So good. Thank you, Steven Seaborg. I cherish that record in my collection.
The Seaborg Record of the Month Club never fails to deliver with some just amazing.
We'll get a little video of that gatefold so everybody can see the grandeur of the origami.
It's amazing.
Pop-up book that the gatefold is. It's really extraordinary.
Yeah, it's
it
amazing.
Really is. Wow.
All right, AD, where are you taking us, brother?
All right, Ryan. Well, I'm just going to do this segment real quick and kind of do something that hasn't been done here very often, okay? And so maybe a rule. I might be breaking a rule. I don't know. We don't have many rules here.
There are rules. It's Thunderdome.
Right. Exactly. I mean, you know, the record skipping thing, that's a rule. Kind of other rules. We have the supper's ready rule, you know, and things like that. So, Ryan, you and I both have this album, right?
Mm-hmm.
The last one I'll be spinning tonight. The band has a total of 3 albums out. They're from Brooklyn, of all weird things, as was my first pick.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
And they followed up those 2 studio albums with a live album, as did my first pick.
Oh,
so, yeah.
How serendipitous.
Right? Thing is, those other 2 records aren't easy to find in the wild, but we both happen to have tracked this record down. Now, you played it a long time ago. You played a track from this record. And
back in 64.
Yep. And I very recently played a track from this record.
Okay.
And, you know, we don't have a rule per se, but, you know, sometimes a one-off record like this that we both have and none of us have the other records of that set, we don't want to pick too much fruit from the same tree. So I was figuring, you know what? You're not going to be playing it anytime soon because I just played it recently, and I probably won't either. So that record will be sort of put away and lost in the collection, sadly, for probably a while. Who knows? Because that's sort of our MO here. Not intentional, but it just kind of turns out that way.
Okay.
So this record was so fucking good, and it just deserved so much more accolades than it did, that I thought I would play more from this record now rather than just either putting it away or hey, look, we found one of the new records and we're going to play something for that. And this record gets lost because the record that you played, the song you played, was a big jangly pop song. And the one I played, well, earlier on this episode, was the jangly pop song. I'm going to play another song.
Let's do another Laughing
from
Dogs.
From the Laughing Dogs album is what I'm going
to
do.
It's good enough right? to merit that.
I was just thinking, you know, kind of our MO is to be, yeah, it's a great record. We put that on and you're going to look through the archives and go, ah, you know, I'd love to play more from the Laughing Dogs. We just played it a few episodes ago, so it'll wait. And we both chose great, great pop songs from this record. But again, their story kind of starts and really builds around the CBGB's area. Areola. Yeah, I meant areola. Era. And so I thought I could pick another band and or put this record away for a while. And I went, you know what? I'm just going to play a song that totally rocks by these guys before I put it away, maybe.
I like this idea.
Right?
You have done that. There is a precedent. Frank. It happened with Frank.
Yeah, it's like we got to play another one.
We got to play another Frank song.
Because it might be a while till we play another Frank song.
The one where she's got on the cover with a glass of milk.
Yeah, Miriam and Esther, I believe, was one of the tunes. Yes. It was awesome.
I miss Frank. We're going to bring Frank back. Now you can bring Frank back. Yes.
Oddly enough, Steven Seaborg is responsible for that as well.
I know. He's mixed up in this one, too.
Yeah. Your hands aren't clean, Steven Seaborg. Oh, no. Guilty. So, yeah. So, you know, I thought, God, you know, we'll put, you know, it would be a crime to not play some of their other. We're talking about how great the record, or I was talking about how great the record is. And the pop songs are great, but let's just put on a straight ahead fucking sort of,
one of the rockers.
Pop punk number. Yeah. You know? They never go full punk like you would think, like punk.
Like a Jerry
means,
Lee Lewis.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, exactly. And it's not safety pin punk, you know, it's like power punk or pop punk. You know, but it's cool. So I could go into this big long story about it. Fuck it, we've already done that. Let's just play another Laughing Dogs song.
All right. Okay? Well, let me ask you this before we drop the needle.
Yeah.
Because don't you think that is the reason why this album is lost in history? Is because it didn't really have that identity of are you a punk band? Are you a power pop band? Or are you just an NRBQ pop band and not even very powerful? You know, because they kind of hit on all of those genres on the same record. And I think it's the lack of identity that puts this record, sadly, as great as it is, puts this record in the dollar bin, so I find it, right?
I couldn't argue with that, really. You know, though, and yes, but I think time, and it's not going to make them anymore, it's not going to keep it out of the dollar bin, but I think time has said to me, just having gotten this album, sat down and listened to it, and went, time has been good to this record. It's better than, you know, it's one of those, God, it's a shame that this record wasn't discovered. I didn't have it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why wasn't this discovered when it came out? Why isn't this band bigger? This is a great, great album. 1979, man. Things were a little different then.
Well, Mott had broken up.
You know they had. Right? So I just figured let's just put on a straight ahead fucking,
all right,
you know, rock and roll guitar, Laughing Dogs. It's the last, I think, what I play, the track 5 on side one. Let's track 6. Track that comes right after it.
We could have just let it play.
Right, we could have probably, right? But this is a song called I Need a Million, written by Ronnie Carl and James Leonard. And, of course,
Lenny and Carl.
Yep, Lenny and Carl. Hey, Lenny. Hey, Carl.
Hey, Carl. Simpsons.
Right?
I love it.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, let's do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The God, Laughing Dogs.
That song is great.
It kicks ass. It's called I Need a Million. It's off the same fucking record I played the first.
It's literally the next track.
Yeah, it's the fifth one and sixth track.
But it shows the difference between the harmonica, Beatley. I don't want to say Beatley, but
it's just rock and roll, man. It's MC5 if it wants to be. If you want to take it there, I mean, with the abandon. I mean, but it really kind of, like I said, you played it on episode 133, and you played a great pop song, and I played a great pop song because those songs should be heard. And I thought, man, what a great way to start my little segment. It's a nice little pop song.
Yeah.
And then right before I put that record away, I'm going, we might just put that fucking record away and not really get to their sort of their CBGB, their rock and roll side, which is totally represented on this album.
Yeah.
Like you said, it might lack direction, but nowadays, I mean, this record came out in 79. This record's a great record. It stood the test of time. I think that the breadth and the width of their styles and how well they did each style, you know, they didn't feel forced to stick to, well, you have to just do this, defined by one sound.
It is a diverse album.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they do all of it well.
I think so.
Great fucking record, man.
What label's it on? Is it Epic?
It's on CBS.
Okay. Do you the one mystery that we have not solved, because we can't get in touch or find interviews with these people, is did they know that that was Paul Stanley and Gene Simmons' album cover pre-Kiss?
I don't know.
And that's why they chose it? It just seems unbelievable to think that it's not.
It's a Brooklyn thing. They were all in the same sort of
in the same
area.
Circles, and the fact that you mentioned that one of the guys worked with Ace Frehley.
Now you notice right here, look on the stoop. Now that photo's on the front, you turn it around, it's the same stoop on the back cover.
Yeah,
the band's sitting on the steps, but over here are four masked figures.
Exactly.
And
so they had to have known it.
And so it's sort of mocking Kiss. And if you notice on the inner sleeve, there's a photo of the band playing live.
Yeah.
And the entire audience is in masked. They're in masks. So they're like, all the Kiss people are, look, they're watching us. You're watching us. That's sort of a, right? You see that? How the audience is all in masks?
Yeah. So that's, I can't take my eyes off the Gretsch White Falcon that the guitar player is playing.
I don't know if that's a high five or middle finger.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, they have to have known.
Makes you wonder if there's a lawsuit involved. At one, once upon a time,
well,
hey, Gene Simmons,
no lawsuit you could do.
I can't see Gene Simmons going, that was our album cover here, you can just have
it. It's so veiled that there's no way it would have any legal ramifications.
You never know. They might. You never know.
And
there
it was all
been
tied up.
Yeah, I mean, if it's a stock photo, Gene,
it's a stock photo. I think
it
is all it is.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know where.
I think they were just kind of winking, like, yeah.
Yeah, it might have been a friendly high five, or it might have been
because no one knew about, and also no one knew Wicked Lester and knew anything about
right
that album art in 1979.
But they chose to include sort of a veiled Kiss reference, though.
Right.
So why?
So people buy it in 2019.
For a buck, though.
Yeah,
man.
Sadly.
Right.
Yeah, so good.
Man, the Laughing Dogs. What a great, great record. That was.
Don't pass that one up, man. Don't think it. Oh, that's a shitty band.
It's so much more than just a great pop album. And it is a great pop album. It's got some great rock and roll. It's got some great post-punk, you know, CBGB's post-70s punk. Really solid stuff, too.
Yeah.
You know, so anyway, yeah. I Need a Million. Laughing
all
dogs.
Right.
Me too.
Yeah.
How about that?
Don't we all?
How about that?
Yeah, surely
don't we all? Let's thank Liz Damian Brooks for hanging out with us here tonight.
Running
the controls over there in the Shabby Command Center, the ever dilapidated Shabby Command Center. The headphone amp is fucking with me all night long. How's it going over there, Liz? Everything good?
Everything's great.
So we're going to go back out on the road. We're going to miss you, Liz.
I know.
We'll
miss
be gone
you.
For
one of these
a
days. I'm
going
to go
days.
With you.
You should.
I know. I should go again.
We don't do the West Coast very often, but you can.
No,
you got really? Some. We're playing DC. When are we playing DC?
Yeah.
I love NOLA.
I think it's August 20. What? August 21st, 22nd.
I think one of these days I'm.
Oh, it's
go,
August 21.
When you
okay.
go back
the night before
to,
New York.
Okay.
When you go back to NOLA, I might go one of these times.
We're going down there and doing a
New
thing
Orleans.
For the New Orleans Saints thing,
yeah.
And then we're going
September
down and doing
7.
It. Yeah. And then
8.
we're. We're doing Mardi Gras parade again.
Yeah, I know you got to do Mardi Gras.
Come and see us, you guys. We're on the road. Actually, as this episode comes out, we are just about ready to look into August and September, I guess. So, LewisPrimaJr.com.
New York City, I think we're doing, yeah.
Yeah, New York City. A lot of East Coast stuff.
DC, yeah.
DC, people, come on.
Iowa.
Well, we did, I think that's happened. By the time this comes out, I think that's happened.
We'll be just finishing Iowa.
We're going to be, by the time you're listening to this, we're on a bus going, God, I hate you.
Yeah. Let me get the fuck out of here. What smells so horrible? Oh, it's me.
If I never need to see you again.
Yeah.
But anyway, see you Monday for the podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
That's usually how it goes.
Yeah.
Well, the mystery boxes are empty, so I'm going to hop in my hot air balloon and leave this strange land of Oz to gaze disdainfully down at the petri dish of Sunny Slope, where the tiny little hookers and crackheads bounce off each other in a wonderful cosmic dance of the downtrodden. Before I go, I'll give a medal of courage to the lion that has to live here, A.D. Adams.
Well, yeah. You know, this was a fun show. You know, it really was. And when I say fun show, you can bet your ass I truly don't mean it. But rest assured, we'll be back next week for another, air quote, fun show. So what have we learned from this week's foray into the secret worlds that lie deep within the infinite grooves of our precious vinyl, Ryan? Mm. What have we learned?
Mm.
I've learned that it always goes down a little easier with some good pals, some booze, and a couple of good old hog knuckles. They don't hurt none. Yeah. Well, thanks for letting us crawl into your ear holes once again. People out there listening, take care until we see you next time. And I'd like to wish a very good evening to my pal and my co-host and the official ball inspector for the world champion U.S. women's soccer team, Mr. Ryan McKay. Good night, everybody.
Just want to make sure they're inflated properly.
Hey guys, a portion of the Shabby Road Record Show is brought to you by alltheworldsastage.net. For all your bands and company merchandise needs, click on alltheworldsastage.net and never pay screen charges for orders of more than 24 items. There are no PMS or flash charges either. Mention Shabby Road Record Show and you'll receive 10% off on your order. alltheworldsastage.net.